Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This 10th year Daily Tech News Show is made possible by you. Thanks for listening, all of you, including Andrew Bradley, Dale Mulcahy, and Matt Zaglin. Coming up on this DTNS, Microsoft has a co-pilot for everything, and that might mean you don't need to look for software anymore. Plus, Waymo adds its autonomous cars to Uber. So are we still 40 years away from autonomous cars? This is the Daily Tech News for Tuesday, May 23rd, 2023 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Redwood, I'm Sarah Lane.
Coming from your nation's capital, your boy, Big Chris Ashley.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
How does it feel to be so close to the seat of power, Chris?
It feels great.
Yeah.
Except I moved as far away from it as possibly could without
still technically being here. Yeah.
Right.
Well, Netflix just launched its password sharing crackdown in the US. So Americans, get ready to rumble. $7.99 a month if you want to add a person to your account. Here are the rest of the quick hits.
Shutterstock announced it will buy Giphy from Meta for $53 million. Now, you might say that sounds like a lot, but back in 2022, the UK's Competition and Markets Authority ordered Meta to sell the unit over competition concerns. Meta reportedly paid $400 million for Giphy back in 2020. Oh,
quite a discount. Maybe they threatened to call it Jiffy if they didn't lower the price.
Yeah.
Amazon unveiled the Fire Max 11 tablet, and it's 11 inches and starts at $230, gives you an aluminum enclosure, fingerprint reader, expandable storage, and supports an optional stylus and magnetic keyboard. Sorry, though, headphone jack fans, it has none, but it's available for pre-order right now, shipping June 14th.
Adobe is now offering a new generative fill feature in Photoshop in beta. It draws, get it, draws, from the Firefly image generation model, to extend images and can add and remove objects with text prompts. An official public release is expected the second half of this year. The feature also supports content credentials, which attaches attribution data to an image to indicate that it was indeed edited with an AI system.
Chris, Sarah, Intel's tearing up x86. It's starting over, starting from scratch. Actually, it released a white paper outlining a new microarchitecture for its chips called X86S. It eliminates the 16-bit and 32-bit legacy support. So if you get an Intel chip right now, it supports 16-bit, 32-bit, and 64-bit operations. Given that 16-bit launched in 1978, the chances are very few of you would be affected by its absence. But there is a lot of 32-bit software out there. However, most recent OSs are 64-bit. So now's the time to start talking about this. Plus, virtualization can do a lot for legacy software to keep it running without having to rely on the chip to do it. So why do it at all? Well, you get rid of older support, and that leaves more room on the chip die for other features. It increases the power efficiency. It could speed up boot times. It lowers the attack surface for security issues. And in the end, this is just a white paper. So don't get too afraid of it if you are afraid at all. It's just the beginning of the conversation. We're a long way from a shipping product.
Don't you love how everything is either an S or a plus? When they're let's keep the name, but spice it up a little bit.
Why not put a 64, x86-64? That wouldn't be confusing at all.
I'll tell you why after the show.
Okay. Meanwhile, Google followed up on stories that said that the company was going to offer AI tools to advertisers. Product Studio lets merchants on Google Shopping and Shopify users of the Google and YouTube app edit and customize product shots using generative AI. You can do things like change the background image to be more seasonal, or remove the background altogether, or change the resolution of an image. Product Studio launches for U.S.-based sellers in the next few months. Google also repeated the plans that it announced at Google I.O. to place ads in its search chatbot. We still don't have a timeline on when, though.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, then, let's talk about what a different arm of Alphabet, the non-Google part of Alphabet, is doing, Sarah.
Okay. So Alphabet's self-driving unit, Waymo, announced that it entered into a multi-year strategic partnership with Uber.
I thought they hated each other.
Well, the quick version here is that later this year, a set number of Waymo vehicles in the Phoenix area, in the metro Phoenix area, will integrate into the Uber and Uber Eats apps for ride hailing and delivery services. We don't have information on how much those rides might cost or how many vehicles that Waymo might make available in its fleet, but you might be saying to yourself, as you were, Tom, mm-hmm. Wait, didn't Waymo sue Uber once over autonomous cars? The answer is yes. So let's talk about why they've possibly made peace.
Yeah, so this announcement comes just a few weeks after Waymo's chief product officer, Saswat Panigrahi, said Waymo wants to increase its ridership tenfold by next summer. Waymo wants to do that. They want people in their cars. By partnering with Uber, Waymo expands its reach quite a bit. A lot more people use Uber's app than have installed Waymo's apps. So they get new customers beyond those who have got that branded Waymo One app, which many people have not. And there's more. Chris, what else is in this partnership?
Well, the Waymo Uber deal also includes Waymo Via. That's Waymo's autonomous trucking arm. And Uber Freight, which is Uber's logistics spin-out. If this is all a little confusing, Waymo has clarified that it won't exclusively allocate vehicles to Uber, but when a Waymo vehicle is accessible for a qualifying ride, an Uber user has the option to request a car through the Uber app.
I mean, part of this sounds to me like Waymo is like, Our vehicles are just sitting around.
Yeah.
We need to do something with them.
Unused capacity, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. My guess is that they're like, okay, the app's probably not out there. It's probably not as good as what Uber provides. And so when you're faced with those decisions from a product standpoint, you really have one or two decisions: you buy or you partner, right? Or you build. Buy, partner, or build. And then you start weighing out, you know, which is faster, which is easier. And in their case, they're like, it was easier to partner, which to me, I like to see these type of things happen.
Yeah. Well, and Uber has gone the opposite direction. The reason we had that lawsuit was stealing trade secrets about autonomous cars. Uber has long since abandoned its internal development of autonomous cars and is partnering with other companies, not just Waymo. Waymo isn't even the first autonomous car company it partnered with. It also partnered with Motional. So Uber is sort of saying, we're a transport app. If you need to get something from one place to another, you use Uber for it. So if Waymo wants to tap into that and say, hey, we'll be the car, that's great. Just like Uber doesn't say, oh, you can't use, you know, a certain brand of car to drive people around. They don't care. As long as you pass their background check and qualify and your car is in decent shape, you can use the Uber app to pick up people and give rides. They're going to work with Waymo on this, too. And so it's good for Uber as well as good for Waymo.
Yeah, Catherine Barna, who is heads up PR at Waymo, told TechCrunch of this news that Waymo is building a driver, not a vehicle. to which I say, well, it's a vehicle also.
Well, it has to be in a vehicle. But I guess what they're saying is we could put this in other cars too, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Right, yeah.
Well, honestly, the big thing that I'd like to see come out of this is if Uber says we're not, you know, you don't have to build us cars, but if you could expand in areas where we're not, that would help us get, you know, expand our brand and get us in there faster. And that's the type of thing that I would like to see come out of this, because I remember for quite some time Uber was out there about us taking Ubers. There was none in my area mm-hmm. for quite some time. Now they're everywhere.
Yeah.
But there was a good little while where it was doing their thing. We didn't have an Uber in this area.
There's a lot of places that don't have Uber that autonomous cars also have problems in, you know, rural unmapped areas, places like that. But there are still places where an Uber could operate, an autonomous car could operate, but they just don't have the drivers, or even days where areas are like, we don't have enough drivers today. So this could fill that gap. I don't know how far we are from that, though, because this is just in Phoenix. And while they've been slowly expanding the area they serve in Phoenix, it's not like Phoenix has been taken over by autonomous cars. The only other place they're doing this is San Francisco, even though they have some tests undergoing in Austin and L.A. So it feels like an expansion, but I have long since stopped saying, well, you know, give us a couple of years and it's going to be autonomous cars everywhere. Because 5 years ago, people were telling me it's going to be 40 years. And those people are now, you know, 35 years away from being right. So I still don't know if 40 is the right number, but it's definitely taking longer than people thought, than some people thought.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and also for anybody who's – oh, go ahead, Chris.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to know who controls the AC because, yeah, Phoenix is no joke in the summertime.
Yeah, that better be in the app. Is that in the Uber app too? Yeah.
It is no joke. But Phoenix is also, for anybody who's not familiar with the area – it's a very large, flat grid city.
Good point.
You know, with some exceptions, of course. But this is, it's a compared to San Francisco, it's a great place to test out stuff without a ton of hills and weather to
it's a good easy level to start on before you go to San Francisco and you raise your difficulty level.
All right, time
for the Microsoft Build news. Microsoft Build Developer Conference happening starting today. We're going to talk about Microsoft's larger strategy with AI in a few minutes, but let's start with some of the more consumer facing announcements.
So OpenAI will start using Bing as the default search experience in ChatGPT. The chatbot will now include search and web data, as well as citations. ChatGPT Plus users will get it starting now, and eventually will come to free users too.
Yeah, and that same marriage of ChatGPT and Bing is also coming to Windows. Windows Copilot will be available in the taskbar, among other things. It'll let you adjust settings on Windows with a phrase, so you don't have to figure out where they are. You can just sort of say what you want. It can also summarize content from the clipboard. It can compose text, get answers to questions from the web, and other chatbot-y type things. Windows Copilot is coming in preview in June.
Yeah, we're going to talk about all the other copilots in a minute or two, but this is a great one. If I can just tell Windows, I need to turn the sound down on the headphone out port without having to remember which control panel, which settings place it is, what it's called. And granted, Chris, I know you and I were talking earlier today about the fact that you kind of get good at that, and then Windows changes it on you. This is right. Way better. So you can just always know, like, all I got to do is say it. And then you don't have to rely on their graphic design interface or keeping up on changes. It just does it.
Yeah, and that's the thing, that even after all these years from when Windows 8 launched, it seems like they're still trying to redo a lot of the underpinning UI, because, you know, the control panel, it's been updated. But for the most part, once you need to get to some of those deep settings, it's back to, you know, what Windows used to look like. And honestly, sometimes I just struggle to find exactly what I'm looking for. So being able to tell my computer just to change the graphics or, you know, just to change the volume,
open a new window,
all of that stuff, you know, it, you know, turn off Wi-Fi, turn it on, you know what I mean? Reset the Wi-Fi, all of that stuff. I don't have to go look for it and click here and click there. It's awesome. I really like this.
We've been promised this before. There was Clippy. There was Cortana. There was Bob. Like,
it's almost like they went with Copilot because they were, you know, they're,
I mean, Cortana was supposed to be what this is. You
with
know,
voice, it
was
just, this is text, but yeah, basically the same idea.
But
right?
But say in natural language what you want and let me help you. Cortana was not long for this world, but that was, you know, early days of assistance. And, you know, we are in a new era now. And I don't know, I sort of struggle to be like, well, how hard is it to just like go to my menu settings and like do what I want to do? But that's because I'm just conditioned to think of it that way, because those were my only options before.
Yeah. And those kinds of things are never that hard until you don't have to do them anymore. And then suddenly you're like,
and then you say,
really
remember
glad.
Remember when we used to scroll through settings?
I used to open folders from the DOS prompt because that's how I learned to do it. And then eventually I gave up and started using the graphical interface and never looked back. It's the same idea. Like, do you go to Terminal to open all your folders? No, you could.
Right.
But that's not the best use of your time.
Well, then, I mean, even beyond that,
some people who'd say, yes, it is.
If you're already in Terminal, then maybe, sure.
Yeah.
But then you start thinking about all the app integrations. So I know when I'm producing the podcast and I need to save a copy of this file, I'm like, here, open this folder where I keep these files and then, you know, import these audio files in from this folder that I just created. You know, just being able to talk through that instead of just saying, you know, click here. Because I can't tell you how many times I started editing a show, but it automatically opened up the last show that I edited. So I'm pulling in old files and I'm like, oh my God, this is last week's show. You know what I mean? So just, being able to specifically say, pull in the files I just created from this week's show. And it's like, got you.
Can it get smart enough to say, I want to do a new podcast edit. And then it knows all of the routines that you normally do.
Opens a template.
Yeah.
Right.
Ooh.
Right.
Yeah. I could jam with that.
And then it tells me, I got you, homie.
I've edited it for you. I actually hosted it. Here it is.
Yes, you are no longer needed. Go take a nap.
Yeah. A few other announcements out of Build. Bluetooth Low Energy coming to Windows in the May non-security preview release. Live captions for Windows 11 now support 10 new languages. That includes simplified and traditional Chinese, Danish, English, French, German, Italian, Japanese, Korean, Portuguese, and Spanish. A new shield icon will start showing up over the network connection icon to let you know if your VPN is active. That's nice. And machine-generated summaries of app reviews will be displayed in the Microsoft Store. More Microsoft Build news in just a second. Have a thought about something on the show, though, and you don't know our email address, let me fix that. It's feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
All right, let's talk more about what happened at Microsoft Build today. The main theme of today's keynote was co-pilots. Co-pilots is how Microsoft is branding the term of virtual assistants built into a specific tool. For example, GitHub Copilot uses generative AI to help coders.
Yes, and at Microsoft Build, the company announced it's going to add co-pilots to Edge, Office, we mentioned the Windows one. Windows Terminal is going to have its own Copilot. Dynamics 365, which is actually powering a lot of these other ones. Power Pages, so you can build a website. And that's just the ones I have off the top of my head. There's even a tool called Azure AI Studio that helps developers build their own Copilots. So you can build an instance of something like ChatGPT or GPT-4 using a company's private data. If we've had a lot of emails about people saying I'm not allowed to use ChatGPT because we're worried about confidentiality, this would help get past that. In fact, Microsoft CTO Kevin Scott, who is also EVP of AI at Microsoft now, had an interesting exchange on The Verge with Nilay Patel. He pointed out that up until now, you interact with a computer device by either writing a program for it, if you're a developer, or in most cases, for those of us in the audience, using a program somebody else write. Even if you're a developer, you're not writing all your programs yourself. Copilots are moving us to a world where you may have to do less explicit work to align them and steer them to a task, in Scott's words. This strikes me as a more profound effect than many of the other ones we hear about regarding these kinds of tools. You potentially won't need to look for software to do a thing. You won't have to go to an app store to do a thing. You could just ask your copilot to do it, and it will either find the right API or possibly just write the code for a new piece of software for you on the spot. Is that too optimistic, Chris, to think that it would go that well?
I don't think so, actually. Just based off of what we've seen this year alone, and you know how we've seen the use cases for ChatGPT and what people are doing with it, I don't think that's too optimistic at all. Because the idea that I could say, "Hey, here's the three things that I do every day, and can you automate these so they open up in sequence or do something in sequence," is profoundly attractive to me. I can't tell you, as I failed probably three or four times to learn how to write basic code, and I just take the book and throw it across the room, not having to do that at all, and just being able to tell it, this is what I want to do, and it determines, well, I need to write a little piece of PowerShell scripting to do this, but then there's an app that allows me to do that. I can put those things together and automate this task for you. I find that to be amazing and really, really cool.
Yeah, same. I mean, my only question that I don't think was addressed this morning at the keynote was, okay, let's say I work for, you know, X company, and I leave that company, and I've got, you know, a variety of, co-pilots that have helped me. Is that in any way tied to the company?
Yes. Yes, Azure instances are entirely within the company. So there's two things going on here. One is the more like in the now announcement of these Azure instances, right? The Azure AI Studio that says, hey, you want to use ChatGPT in your company? You can whip something up to use it on your own data. I'm taking Kevin Scott's words and projecting them out a little farther and saying, but beyond that today in the enterprise case, what about a situation where you've got something running on your operating system where you could say, hey, I need a program that will automate the podcast that I make every day. And that thing is sitting on your desktop. So it knows that because it knows you, what you do. And it's like, oh, let me write a piece of software that makes that for you.
Crazy amazing. But, you know, and as awesome as that sounds, we shouldn't overlook the enterprise application and use cases as well, because some of the ones they lay it out as an example, which is like summarizing meeting notes and, just sending that out to the team. So being able to request, hey, what are the key takeaways from this particular meeting? And it's saying here, boom, 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 here you go. Really, you know, I know my wife, she hates doing meeting notes. And, you know, when she didn't have to do them anymore, she probably did a little two-step. And so having an AI being able to do that for you is pretty darn cool, actually.
And if you're sitting there going like, wait, isn't that what ChatGPT's been doing since last fall? No, not in the enterprise, because to put your meeting notes through ChatGPT might violate your company's confidentiality. But with this instance that keeps it local, now you could say, oh, just train on the documents that are in the company instance, don't let them out of the network, and now you can do the summarization and pull in other things and do all those things that you want to use it for, and also have it limited so that it's not pulling in other things that would make it hallucinate more. It's limited to like just work on the data in our company, so it's going to have more relevant answers too.
Yeah, and oftentimes we find ourselves looking at data and not necessarily interpreting it properly, right? And so you seeing one thing, but there may be missing a nuance that could steer you into the next product direction or the next idea for the company. And so having an AI behind that and being able to look at the data you normally look at every day, but then we'll say, hey, what are some of the key trends that you're finding in this data? And it's like, boom, 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 boom. It could validate where you're thinking, or it could help you pinpoint something that you missed. So all in all, I hate running reports. This one, that's all I see in this. It's like, if I could tell it to, hey, run these reports, let me know what my trends are, what we're looking at for the last, 3 years or something like that. Oh my God, if we did this direction, that'd be all in.
I'm still fascinated with this idea that I wouldn't even need to go get apps at some point, that I could just tell my chat, right?
I want to do this.
Yeah. I want to capture all the audio that's coming into my computer from this device, but not from this device, and not have to try to configure Audio Hijack. It'll just go, oh, well, let me make that for you. Like that's fascinating. One other thing that came out of Build worth noting, Microsoft is working on watermarking AI-generated content. So Bing Image Creator and Designer, which is kind of their Canva, will detect images made with the C2PA spec, which can then reveal whether any kind of generative tool was used or not. They're using a certain standard. Not everyone is using that standard. So yeah, we've got a watermarking standards war brewing. Microsoft's using the one that Adobe... in fact, when we talked about that in the quick hits earlier today, earlier in the show, that's the C2PA spec. ARM and Intel are using that spec. On the other hand, Stability, Shutterstock, Google, and Midjourney are all using different standards for this right now. So we're going to have everybody, come together like the smart home industry has done with Matter at some point. But Microsoft has picked theirs. It's C2PA.
Well, not everybody can agree on what the right display should look like. But if you like what has been kicking around as of late, we've got foldables, we've got rollables, and Samsung Display announced the Rollable Flex. It's a vertically rolling display, very much like a scroll, that can extend from 49 millimeters to 254 millimeters. Company also showed off a sensor OLED display, which acts as a sensor that can recognize fingerprints anywhere on a screen, as well as monitor heart rate and blood pressure with just a finger touching the screen. Rollable Flex, though, is one example of what Samsung plans to exhibit at SID Display Week 2023, an annual display industry conference in the Los Angeles Convention Center. Kicked off today, goes till Thursday.
Yeah, so Tuesday, May 23rd, if you're listening to this later. I was more impressed by the sensor display because we've seen rollable displays. Doesn't surprise me that Samsung would come up with a good one. And remember, this is Samsung Display. This is a different part of Samsung than Samsung, the phone maker. So this may or may not end up in Samsung phones, could end up in other phones. But that sensor, where you don't have to build a fingerprint detector under the screen. Right. The screen just is the fingerprint detector so that you can touch anywhere. You don't have to pick the right place. And it can do blood pressure and heart rate. That's fascinating to me.
Guy who takes his mother's blood pressure every single morning. Yes. Here, Mom, put your hand here. Gotcha. Boom. Done. You know what I mean? That would be awesome. But the fact that it rolled vertical actually super interests me because the first thing I thought of was sitting on a plane. And being, often you spread wide, you're spreading into somebody else's space. But vertical, that's all you, baby. That's all your seat in front of you. Watch that thing. You
yeah,
get to go.
That's true.
Yeah.
And I know that, we're talking millimeters. It's not that big. But, as somebody, I'm going through a move right now. And, everything I think about is, when you look at, your future living room, you're like, well, where's the TV go? Everything has to go around that wall where the TV goes. So when you have things like this, you start to think, okay, well, maybe we can make some use of some,
We can work with
that. 254 millimeters, that's what, 8 inches, something like that? So
it's probably not your living room TV.
But it's phone size. It's phone size.
Yeah. And, it just goes to show you that, things can sort of, expand and then, be compacted, under the bed or something.
All right, let's check out the mailbag.
Let's do it. This one came from Andrew, who wrote in about the Azure private OpenAI instances that we mentioned earlier in the show today. Andrew's company is trying it in beta, and he says, for companies that are already putting out some or all of the infrastructure in the cloud, it would be a good option. They even have a demo repo for tests driving a bot that only uses your private docs for answers. We're testing this at my office now with an eye to proving to ourselves that it's not phoning home.
Okay, so Andrew is testing what they talked about at Build that we were just mentioning, and they're watching. They're looking to be like, all right, this isn't sending anything to Microsoft secretly behind the scenes, is it? Even if meant well. So Andrew, let us know. Let us know what you find. Very good.
Indeed. Andrew has a link to how they're using it. You can check that out in our show notes. But for now, we're going to thank you, Chris Ashley, because you did great today. Let folks know where they can keep up with your work.
Hey, you can find me on hanging with my boys on SMR Podcast or making some barbecue on Barbecue and Tech. Either one of those shows, you come check us out. Better if you check out both.
Indeed. We also want to extend a special thanks to Dan Gardner. Dan Gardner, you know who you are, but for everybody else, you're one of our top lifetime supporters for DTNS. We want to thank you for all the years of support. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Dan. Dan's one of the patrons who gets to stick around for the extended show, Good Day Internet. HBO Max has relaunched as Max. We're going to talk about how that's going. Chris and I had very different experiences with it. And we're also going to talk a little bit about the beginning of that Netflix crackdown in the U.S.
Just a reminder, you can catch the show live Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern. That's 2000 UTC, and you can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We are back doing it all again tomorrow with Scott Johnson joining us. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.